Welcome to another edition of Mormonland. I'm Dave Noyce, and I oversee our faith coverage. I'm joined again by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher-Stack. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
In 2017, after the election of President Donald Trump, several female members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, distressed by the increasing political polarization and eroding ethics in government, formed Mormon Women for Ethical Government. That group, which is not endorsed by the church, is dedicated to seeking a peaceful, just, and ethical world with a pledge to be faithful, nonpartisan, and proactive, along with a commitment to civility. In a few short years, its membership has ballooned to more than 7,000. Now, with the nation in the midst of another deeply divisive presidential race, we've invited the organization's executive director, Emma Petty Adams, and its engagement director, Christy Black, to talk about their group and its goals. They join us today via Zoom from their respective homes in Nebraska and Arizona. Emma and Christy, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Glad to have you both here. So this is a question for both of you to get started. Were you among the initial founders of the group? And if not, how did you end up getting involved? Emma, why don't you start?
Sure. So no, neither of us are founders. I was invited by a friend, and honestly, someone else invited her and someone else invited her. So initially, as you mentioned, the group started in 2017 as a Facebook group. And from there, we've built an entire organization. So I came in just from a college friend who's now on our leadership team when we get to work together again. And she invited me, and I had been concerned and honestly praying for somewhere, something to kind of have an outlet for my concerns at that time. So it was definitely an answer to prayer.
So Christy, what about you?
My story is pretty similar. I was actually involved in a couple of other political nonprofit kind of grassroots type groups before I found MWEG, but I was added by a friend from high school added me.
So tell us, both of you, about the organization's founding principles. Where did you get them and what are they?
Thanks. So from the very beginning, you know, our founders, led by Charlie Mullins Glenn, who's going to be a familiar name to you and probably many of your listeners, really is kind of miraculous and kind of unexpected how it happened. She had a group of friends that were kind of just getting together just to talk about what can we do? You know, what can we do? We're just concerned about the state of the world, concerned about the state of politics. And so they set up a Facebook group, just a real simple Facebook group. And the place, the principles they put in place on that initial kind of round before they opened it up are what still guide us today. So like you mentioned at the front, the faithful, the nonpartisan, the peaceful, and the proactive. And then our six principles of peacemaking. So she just set this group up and invited a few friends to join her, and they neglected to say, don't invite your friends. And that's how we're here, right? And then so before they knew it, they had, I believe it was like 4,000 women within a month. So at that point, they put the stop on things, right? Because all of a sudden you have all of these thousands of people and you need to build an organization to support them. So the story since then really has been one of you know, is being able to engage all of those women and build an organization by which we could take action and educate ourselves. So we've put the stop, we've put the brakes on things at various times. We didn't want to, you know, bring new people in unless we had something to support them with. And so that's been the story since then. But those founding principles, the faithful in our case, which means that we will never take a position against the church. We don't allow criticism of doctrine or leaders in our spaces. And the peaceful one is, I think, fairly self-explanatory. But sometimes I have to kind of, to the Mormon crowd, I have to kind of say, it's not about just being nice, right? Peaceful does not equal just nice. Peaceful actually means you fight against injustice. You just don't do it in a way that is full of vitriol. And the nonpartisan, and then the proactive is pretty obvious. We go and we do stuff. We don't just talk about it. We've built something beyond a Facebook group.
And am I right? I think I read on your website that some of the principles came from Gandhi and Martin Luther King. Is that correct?
Yeah. So those six principles of peacemaking, which you can find on our website, really they inform all that we do. And they are based on the six principles of nonviolence from Martin Luther King Jr. And those in turn, his philosophy was based on those from Gandhi and many, many others. So we see ourselves as, you know, caretakers of those, and our commitment to those is held very high. And it's obviously, it's a high standard, but one that really makes all the difference kind of going in, knowing that those are in place.
So can we turn now to some specific kind of actions or issues that have come up since MWEG's been around? And one's relatively recent. The group is nonpartisan, yet your organization came out fully and squarely in support of Senator Mitt Romney when he cast the lone Republican vote in the Senate to remove President Trump from office, terming his vote, I think, tremendously courageous. How would you respond to critics who called the group's stance on that a very partisan position? Emma, why don't you start?
Well, I think you're not the first person to ask this, and it certainly has come from a lot of different people from a lot of different directions. So that's one way I would answer it, is to say that we are quite used to receiving pushback and questions from all along the political spectrum. And that's one piece of evidence that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're kind of making everyone a little bit mad. I don't think we do it on purpose, but it happens. And I would kind of maybe speak to the broader concept rather than that specific incident. And I think it will help bring it back to light to you. So it's really highly reflective of the polarization of our national discourse to define everything in terms of partisanship, right? Everything is according to party. And partisan is a term that has been practically lost all meaning in individual conversations. And in our experience, and Christy, you know, I think can definitely agree with this, partisan is kind of a shorthand for someone saying, you supported someone I don't support and disagreed with someone I agree with, therefore your position is partisan. And this is something we see a lot. And again, we see it on both sides of the political spectrum. So that leaves us no room to maneuver. So either we try to call out, as we try to call out bad behavior or affirm good choices, because someone's going to disagree and call us partisan. So we have, you know, over the past year, made it very clear what partisan means to us. And we've posted that publicly, what nonpartisan means to us, I should say. So number one, we don't endorse candidates. You'll see we're very careful about that. We try to use peaceful and neutral language. So when we wrote this principles of ethical government that we have, we were very careful to remove kind of partisan catchwords from it. We really work hard to broker cross-party communications. And then we try to find policy solutions that reflect back on our principles. So we don't really care what party they come from, which gives us the flexibility to really promote ethical government. And if Mitt Romney defends it, we're going to shout it from the rooftops and say, thank you. We'll do the same for a Democrat. And we had, if a Democrat behaves badly, we will call them out. I can tell you as an aside, Christy, jump in. We have lots of members chomping at the bit to call out a Democrat president. They're just there waiting for that moment. And we don't pull punches with Republicans. So it's about the principle, not the party. If they're supporting good principles, we support them and we want to amplify and support them. Hopefully that makes sense.
Christy, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, I agree with everything Emma said. And to speak a little bit more to the example you gave of Mitt Romney, I would just add that we try not to focus on, you know, the party in general, but in this case, Mitt Romney went against partisan politics in the choice that he made. And so we do applaud that when people and politicians specifically are themselves acting in a way that's nonpartisan. That's something that we want to encourage, that working across the aisle, that doing things that aren't just answering to the call of their party. So I would just add that Mitt Romney was, in this example, practicing what I would say are the principles of MWEG.
Christy, did your group get, you're the engagement director, did your group get pushback from your own membership on that stance?
I do want to clarify that I am not the only engaged director.
Okay. You're an engagement director.
Only we have another engaged director, mm-hmm. Wendy, and she does so much. I would just never want to step to try to take from her, because she works on a lot of that. My focus is often on immigration, but we certainly, we see pushback in a lot of the things that we do. And I think it's to Emma's point that in a lot of ways we are working on empowering women and helping each other to see issues without that partisan blinder on. And that takes a lot of work. And so people who aren't used to looking at things without that partisan lens are going to have pushback. They're just always going to have that pushback.
Did you get some from your own membership?
I would say on that impeachment one, our members were remarkably unified across the political spectrum on that. In fact, a lot of our messaging around that impeachment trial was highlighting individual Republican members' voices.
How do you determine when the group is going to speak out as a group?
So at its heart, we have these principles of ethical government, right? So they're the thing that we go back to and we look for violations. And so that's, you know, the document that really we go back to and we analyze and we see. But obviously there's interpretation. There's still some objectivity involved. So we have kind of multiple layers of and options and ways to kind of make these decisions. We really listen to our own members. We have this fabulous, active, you know, lively discussion group. And so things will get posted in there. And we, as leadership, we listen and we listen very carefully and we look for those people who disagree with the crowd. You know, if everyone's kind of going one direction, we really kind of listen carefully to the one who's has that kind of soul voice. And then as leadership, we've thoughtfully built a leadership team that crosses geographical divides, crosses age divides, race, and ideological. So my job as executive director is to kind of know where people tend to land or go. And so I want to make sure that I'm surrounding myself with women that as we're making these decisions about what to engage on, that we're actively seeking out different voices who disagree. And so that is, I think, the pragmatic side of things. On the other side of things, the impeachment example is a really powerful one. We had felt that we needed to write something about impeachment for a good 6 to 8 weeks, maybe, Christy. We've just been trying, and we had like 6 different drafts, and none of them were right. And different people kept writing them, and they came to us. And when we finally had the draft and the position, we all just knew. And so we just got together, and there was remarkable unity among the leadership team that what we needed to do in this case was to advocate for a full and fair trial. We didn't take a position on whether he should be acquitted or whether he should be charged, right? We chose to advocate for a full and fair trial. So that's why Romney's vote for witnesses was a big deal to us. And then his decision to then really go with his conscience and cross party lines was a big deal. So it's equal parts practical and inspirational, I suppose. We seek a lot of inspiration in these things.
So Christy, what you said you work on immigration. What are the issues right now that, or over these years that you've really focused on?
You know, this has been a really unique time period for immigration. I think having the administration that we do has brought to light a lot of issues that have been historical, but maybe historically ignored. You know, I think things like the family separations at the border have really spoken to our hearts as sisters in the gospel, that, you know, a lot of our members have been very deeply disturbed because they seem to go against, you know, our instincts to protect and preserve families. And so I think it has brought in, the issue of immigration has really pulled in a lot of concerned women, because they see these things and it's almost a visceral reaction to some of the immigration issues like that. DACA is another one. So many of us live, work, you know, are married to, are here in our country. Sometimes without, you know, documentation, but have been here all our lives, or, you know, these are loved ones who have been here all their lives, and it affects people on a very deep level. And so I do think that immigration since the inception of MWEG has been a very important topic. And I think part of that goes back to, it is really seen as a partisan issue right now. And so it's something that we work really hard to, as Emma said, we do listen to all the different voices we can, and to really understand an issue from all sides, so that when we come forth with, here is our view on this, or here is an action that we feel strongly that we should take, we're coming at it very prepared in understanding the angles with our principles in mind of, we see this as an ethical violation, or if we don't do this, you know, doing this will uphold ethics. You know, it's not always the negative, that will, you know, align with our principles, that, okay, we need to take this action to make sure that these immigrants or people are seen as people, that they are seen as children of God. And like I said, it's just, there's a lot that has happened in the last several years. And
so is that why you wrote that op-ed piece?
It is not the only reason I wrote it, but I am familiar with former Senator Russell Pierce, and he did have a deep involvement in immigration issues in Arizona. I was not involved in politics, I should say, at the time that SB 1070 came into play. But it's something that, as I've become personally more aware of immigration.
Tell our readers what that is. Tell our readers what that is. I mean, our listeners. I'm sorry.
So SB 1070 is legislation that essentially allows for racial profiling. It's saying, you know, that law enforcement has the right to, based on the way someone looks, or, you know, based on these issues that come back to racial and cultural issues, that they have reason to suspect they may not have documentation, to ask them to show their papers. And I'm not an expert on that issue in particular, but I believe part of it was struck down by the Supreme Court. So it's been a very controversial issue. And Russell Pierce was very involved in that at the time, and very, very in favor both of it, and then making sure that parts of it continued after the Supreme Court decision.
So some of the issues you mentioned in immigration, the church as an institution has spoken about, of course, including DACA. They came out quite strongly on that. How do I say this, Emma? Do you take cues from church? Do you kind of wait to see where the church is going to land on things? You obviously have spoken about issues that the church as an institution hasn't spoken about. How do you gauge the church as an institution and where they stand versus your group?
It's a really good question. Well, as I said at the outset, we're not going to take a position that's contrary to the church. So I suppose if we were, I don't know that we've been in this position yet, but I suppose if we were get to a point where we were concerned that maybe something we wanted to do was going to conflict, we would likely just kind of hold off and be more circumspect. With regard to immigration in particular, you know, that stuff that the church has said, a lot of it was already in place long before MWAG was. And then during the past couple of years, there's been several other statements that come out. So I can tell you that as those come out, our members are cheering and are grateful. And, you know, Christy talked a lot about immigration, but I can tell you that dear to her heart and dear to the heart of many of our women is refugees. And that has actually been a big issue that has sent women our direction. In fact, the night of the MWAG started, I believe it was the night of that first travel ban. I know for me personally, I had worked and met and broke bread with Syrian refugees in my community. And so that ban felt personal. It felt like just a gut punch. And I think I would say that's true for a lot of our women. They had answered the church's call to go out, and the I Was a Stranger campaign, and they had become part of these communities, and they had mentored and taught English and had their children play together. And then they realized that their family members weren't going to be able to come. Like my Syrian friends, they had aunts and uncles and cousins that weren't able to then come to the U.S. because of that travel ban. And I think that activated a crowd that maybe otherwise would have waited a little bit longer. It kind of launched them into advocacy in a very rapid fire way.
Well, and I would say that that's definitely part of my story, is that I, like Emma, had broken bread with Syrian families here through the refugee program. And they had families. I mean, the things that they would say, they had families hiding, you know, in bunkers, in basements, as, you know, there was gassing and bombing up above. And I mean, they are family members of people I love. And I don't know that you can hear stories like that and not feel that pull to get involved. And so I do think that the church's previous stances really did set the stage for a lot of our women to join, because they had made those relationships and it had really anchored their belief system that these refugees and these immigrants are people. We know them, we love them, we are them, and they aren't strangers to us. And I think every issue like the travel ban, it just reaffirms to us, wait, why are we treating these people, these loved ones of ours, like strangers, when we know they're not strangers anymore because of the actions that we've taken and the things that the church has taught in the past?
So let me switch the subject a little bit. In the wake of a recent controversy where Latter-day Saints for Trump were using a picture of the temple in its pleas to voters, right after that, or soon after that, MWEG published and promoted a new pledge about not, quote, weaponizing faith for this election cycle. Tell us a little bit about that pledge. How many have signed it? And was it prompted by things like that?
It was definitely prompted by conflict, and that was certainly one of the things that brought a lot of conflict. I mean, it was really born out of this concern that we were seeing some of the more toxic elements of our political culture bleed into our wards and stakes. And in this case, it was happening online. And this is the advantage we have of having all these women all over the U.S. and them kind of bringing back stories. And I saw it in my own ward and stake, and I was watching it happen, watching people just bash each other for their political beliefs in a way that kind of assaulted their moral intentions. So the women in our community are really deeply politically engaged, but they still want and need a place of refuge. Like, we all need that place of refuge, and it is just getting bad out there. So absolutely, that LDS for Trump group using the Salt Lake Temple and the church fonts in their marketing, it upset a lot of our members because they wanted kind of bright lines around their church communities, and they aren't comfortable with anything that implies that a particular vote is divinely mandated. And I think that's what those images implied. So if it's a standard that we're willing to hold ourselves accountable to, that's the first step, right? And so it really got us thinking about how we could really verbalize and put on paper this standard that we already kind of held ourselves to, and then take it out to our church community and see if we could get others to join in. And so we really just sat down and tried to figure out what mattered most in terms of preserving our discipleship. And that's where this pledge came from. And it's been heartening to see how much it's resonated with church members. And we do know that, like, LDS for Biden has signed on, LDS Democrats, they came on board like that. And we were grateful to them doing that. So, you know, whatever this outcome of the election is, we feel very strongly that it's important that our church communities and relationships withstand these pressures. And our MWEG women are willing to commit to it. And I really do think that most of the church members are as well. They just need it verbalized and put down in words and a reason to think about it and to contemplate their own actions and activities.
Christy and Emma, on a personal note, do you find it difficult to check your politics at the door when you're in a church setting? Maybe a little different now that we're all under COVID kind of things, you know, and there's lots of different things that are canceled. But have you found it difficult? I mean, many of your fellow members probably know your position with MWEGs, so.
Yeah, I have absolutely had to check myself on, you know, multiple occasions. I think if you're not thinking about and actively checking yourself, you probably are going to slip up. And because of my position and the women, a lot of the women in my ward and stake might ask me questions about politics, and I appreciate, I'm really grateful that they're coming to me, and I hope that means that they trust me. And so I've had to sometimes in the church hallway say, hey, call me, or, you know, let's talk about this later. And I, you know, I was in the primary presidency for a while, and I was just really careful, just extraordinarily cautious about things I said. That being said, we can do things like do drives for refugees. That's not political. That's humanitarian. There are lots of things we can do that speak to our instincts to help others that are perfectly acceptable and should happen within those church doors and within those boundaries. So I hope we're all checking ourselves, but it's I will admit that at times I do. But I think, and Christy can talk to this a little bit more because she had a recent, very, you know, stark experience with this. I think for a lot of our members, a portion of our members, I won't say a lot, I think there is a portion of our membership who have experienced the weaponization of religion in their direction at church in a talk. I have people who text me, like I'll be in church and I get a text from someone in a neighboring stake and they're like, some guy's up there bearing his testimony. And I won't repeat what he said, but they're like, what do I do? You know, and they've had it done to them. And so they don't want to turn around and do it to anyone else because they know that sinking, terrible feeling that someone has actually called out your politics, sometimes by name from the pulpit or from the Sunday school. And they don't want to do that to anyone else, no matter how right they feel they may be. And this one particular incident, I texted her back and I said, you get up. It was a testimony meeting. And I said, you get up there and bear your testimony about your love for all humans. I'm like, just get up there and just go, just, you know, just let the love overflow out of you. That's the very best thing you can do at this moment.
A strictly nonpartisan testimony. Okay.
Yes. So, the love of all humans.
So Christy, what happened? What was your experience?
Well, in response to there's a couple of different groups locally that, so outside of MWEG, that were concerned with some of the imagery and, you know, of the LDS for Trump group. But also the things that some of our local politicians have said. We've had a couple of politicians make comments about paraphrasing, but you know who to vote for. You know who the right choice is. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, in a way it's the opposite of checking your politics at the door of the church. Instead, it's not checking your religion at the door of your political appointment. And so there was a letter that many of us signed, that just affirmed that not all LDS folks, are behind one particular candidate or another. And it's a letter that I did sign on to and I read through and helped edit a little bit just to make sure that it aligned with what I was saying. And I felt that it aligned with the pledge that MWEG has been promoting. And so Russell Pierce was a senator for Arizona, a state senator, several years ago. And he is currently the deputy treasurer of our county, Maricopa County. And that is an appointed position. So the county treasurer is elected and then they are able to appoint the deputy. And so he does have a government position at this time. And he, on his website, it was brought to my attention that he specifically by name called out several signers of that letter. And in this website post, it was just very, there were several quotes from founding fathers, but also several quotes from general authorities of the church, and used in a way that was very much meant to shame and to almost call us back into order, saying that we were out of line, both politically and religiously. And it really was offensive. It isn't something, you know, I personally have had to grapple with my politics and my religion so much. I think because I don't necessarily fit the stereotype of my ward makeup, that I'm confident in where I am, if that makes sense. I don't read something like that and think, oh, this is so horrible. I think, oh gosh, like, what is this person feeling that that this ugliness would come out, where, you know, I can look at it objectively that way, but I have so many friends and loved ones that have not felt welcome in the faith because of their political or social views that weren't necessarily out of line with the teachings of the gospel, but were not culturally accepted in their wards and congregations and subsequently left. And that strikes me personally, that I don't want my ward congregation to ever feel that way. And I don't want any of my brothers and sisters in the gospel to feel like they're not welcome and don't have a seat at the table because of their political views. And so I did have, you know, the reaction was really less for myself in reading the letter. I didn't read it and fume with rage, or, you know, I thought this is my first reaction, I should be honest, was to leave it be. I thought, I don't even want this to get more airtime because I don't want more people to see this, you know, because it's something that could be very hurtful. And I know was hurtful to people that I know and love. And I went to bed that night and I woke up the next morning and I literally just, my head and heart were filled with thoughts and words. And I thought, I have got to get these out. I have got to get these on paper and express these, because I feel like there are things that need to be said. And this is something that needs to have a light, shown onto it, because I think it's important that we see that. I think that Brother Pierce expressed what a lot of people are feeling, or what a lot of people who might be in the minority politically or feel that they aren't welcome at church feel, that that's what the other members are thinking. And so it's also a call for other members to say, no, this is not what the church teaches. This is not what we believe. We do still want you in our pews and next to us and teaching our children and, you know, breaking bread with us, for them to rally around and say, no, this isn't it. And that reminder that, okay, maybe I've never said anything that extreme, but gosh, have I thought maybe, oh, so-and-so voting this way makes them a little less righteous, or does that cross my mind? Or who have I ever kind of whispered to a friend like, oh, well, you know, she has this belief, or she supports such and such, you know, to make us more conscious, to make sure that we aren't doing those things and that we really are making church a place that's comfortable for everyone.
Okay, so recently there have been a series of video sort of testimonials by Latter-day Saint women about the presidential election, saying, you know, prominent women in Utah like Christine Durham, the Supreme Court Justice, etc. It's hard to say that's, even though President Trump's name is never mentioned, it's hard to say that's not partisan. And I understand MWEG was behind that.
No, we weren't. That wasn't an MWEG. I think there were some MWEG members involved in that. But MWEG is like, it's a win for us as MWEG when our members engage collectively with our actions. And it's also a win for us as MWEG when they go out as individuals and do things like that, right? So it's not an official MWEG, but we certainly see as an example of maybe some women that felt inspired by what we do and they've gone out and created something, you know, that MWEG wouldn't or couldn't do because we wouldn't endorse a candidate or not endorse a candidate. That makes sense. But we hope that all of our members and our women will speak up during this election season. Like, we hope that as individuals, they will go out and tell their friends and neighbors how they're feeling about it, and they'll feel comfortable that they can express it. And as Christy said, that they can hopefully do that in a way that then they feel comfortable they won't be attacked back, and that we don't do that to each other, but that we elevate and allow people to have their personal political opinions and don't condemn them or weaponize our religion against them if they do.
Hey, can I ask one more question? What do you feel women, especially in this case, Mormon women, can especially bring to make government more ethical?
Oh man, that list is so long. We were just on a call about recruiting poll workers and a couple of us were texting. We were like, they need more of us. They need just a lot more of us. But I think there's so many skills that we learn from such a young age, right? I was at a conference one time and a woman sat next to me and I gave her my card and she said, oh, they let you speak in public, meaning you, meaning Mormon women. And I was able to say, we've been doing it since we were children. So public speaking, right? We know how to write a talk, to give a speech, to get up in front of a group. And we start doing it like age 3 as a sunbeam, right? And all the way up. And then we're in front of the congregation at age 11 or 12. So I think the public speaking aspect of it, a lot of members of the church like to talk a lot about the moral authority of women. We embrace that and want to, you know, utilize that in the public sphere. We think that, you know, women thinking about people other than themselves, that tends to be something that culturally we do, that we're raised to do, and perhaps are more inclined to do. I don't know, the jury's out on that or not. I have 3 boys and they are very empathetic and lovely and kind. But I think those skills are needed in the political sphere because you think more about just your own self, your own constituency, your own family. You think about a little bit more holistically about the world. The coronavirus is a great example of that. The people who are dying of coronavirus are oftentimes out of sight. They're older. They're, you know, a lot of people of color, workers in these plants. And we've seen a whole swath of our nation just kind of write them off as though those lives didn't matter, or it's not that many deaths. And I think that's an example where women can shine a light and say they're suffering. And what is it that the government, it's not always the government's job to fix everything, but it's definitely the government's job not to make it worse. And as women, we have, I think, especially women who've been raised in the gospel and raised with a sense, as Christy's talked multiple times about, of the divinity of every human soul. I sang I'm a Child of God to every one of my kids from the day they were born, right? And so bringing that sort of commitment to the public sphere is priceless. And I didn't even get into our organizational skills. I mean, the fact that MWAG in the past 4 years has grown from a 10-person Facebook group to over 7,000 member organization with a board and with, you know, agreements and committees and, you know, structure, that speaks to, I think, the way that we are trained to organize and to do a lot on a little. So thank you to the Relief Society for those skills, right?
Chris, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, I agree with everything that Emma said, and I would just add that that those, you know, lawmakers and decision makers and even voters are going to come up with different decisions. But if we can truly see people as people and we see that divinity, that I think it may or may not change the outcome of our decisions, but it should always be a part of the decision-making process. And I think, like Emma said, that we really are in a unique position to do that because so many of us are engaged in our communities. You know, as members of our community, we're involved in, you know, with refugees, with veterans, with so many things, you know, on a humanitarian level that we are very, very tied to our communities and are able to then take those experiences and then take the skills and empowerment and things we learned on a civic level and really, really make a difference.
I predict you're going to see a wave of Latter-day Saint women running for office in the next few years. I think a lot of them are going to come from MWAG. We hope they do. But we think that the next wave will be launched. And we encourage all the listeners to think about this and to pray about it. I think a lot of times women don't take that sort of question to the Lord because it doesn't seem within the sphere of possibility. And, you know, the Lord needs to have you come bring the question to him before he can give you the answer. So I encourage you to take that question to the Lord and say, how can I be more involved? And maybe go out on a limb and say, should I run for office? And then be ready to hear the answer, right?
Well, we'll be watching for that. Emma Petty Adams and Christy Black, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate the opportunity. Yeah.
And stay safe, you guys, okay?
You too. Thank you.
And thanks to Peggy Fletcher Stack and our producer, Chris Samuels. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrib.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next time on Mormonland.